United States of Horror
may contain some graphic
or explicit content.
Listener discretion is advised. Hello.
Hello, everyone.
Hey, guys.
How y'all doing?
How's it hanging?
You like our new intro?
Our spicy new intro.
I made it myself, no one else.
Okay, Jeffrey.
It's all about me. Mm-hmm. It's all about, yeah.
It's all about me. It's all about my.
No.
I mean, it's all about number one. I don't know.
What else has I in it?
I don't know. Indiana?
Indiana? Are you in Deanna? Mm. Are you out Deanna? So is Diana, but is she in?
No, she's out right now.
She's out. Hello, telephone!
Ba-ding, ding, ba-ding.
Okay, we need to stop. No, stop the podcast. I'm done. Okay. Wait, I'm joking. Wait.
What? Oh, God.
So, everyone.
I'm sorry we're so cringy.
I'm not sorry.
Jeff's not sorry.
You can get over yourselves. Grow up. You know, get a beer, chug it, and just cry like normal people do.
Okay. That's not what we do.
No, we just listen to podcasts all day about murder and mayhem.
That makes us happy.
While eating sushi.
Yeah.
Mm. Tacos and pizza. Pizza.
Food.
Bacon, steak, potatoes. What is taters, Precious?
Oh, goodness gracious.
Can I do my Smeagol voice?
I don't know if they're ready for that yet.
Can we do the Smeagol voice?
That sounds so bad.
What's taters, Precious?
Is that better?
Sure.
With potatoes? Okay, okay, guys. Indiana. Like Indiana Jones.
Potatoes. Boil them, mash them, stick them in a stew.
Put them in my butt. Okay. Indiana Jones. Right? Is that what we're doing?
Yeah. The whole episode is just going to be about Indiana Jones.
Oh, I love Harrison Ford.
Oh, my God. Me too.
I want him to just whip me with that whip and just like...
That's not really what I was thinking.
But oh, I'm sorry.
I was more, you know, along the lines of thinking about him showing me his blaster.
His there blaster. I want him to blast me so good.
Oh God.
I love Harrison Ford. Fight me, guys.
Yeah, I'm not gonna leave.
I imagine him in a one piece, like, what is that? Like a banana hammock, swinging from vine to vine, swinging from place to place with his whip. Of course, he has his hat on because that's his, you know, his thing. All right, so Indiana, not Indiana Jones.
No, I think that, like, as much as I would love to sit and banter with you.
We need to take care of stuff. We got to go,
Kelly. I potentially have I have a long one, but it just depends on how quickly we get through it.
Okay.
This might be a two-parter. We will decipher that at the end of the episode. So stay tuned and maybe... You'll hear from Jeff this week. Maybe not.
I hope not.
I'm so sorry.
I don't want to be in this episode. Indiana episode. Want to hear my diss track?
Diss track? Who are you dissing?
Diss track. This one.
Oh, shut up.
Did you guys like my Jar Jar Binks last week?
I loved it.
It was awesome. Should I do it again for them?
Jeff was literally... editing that episode and laughing hysterically at himself. I walk into the room and he is almost to tears laughing at his own jokes. You guys have no idea what I have to deal with and put up with on a day-to-day basis.
Misa, an idiot!
Okay, that's enough now. Indiana.
Last week's was a lot better.
I know. Obviously, I can't do my voice right now. I can't do any voices, so that's why I'm letting Kaylee do it.
Okay, so I'm going to jump right into it. I have a really heavy episode.
Heavy as in, like, you're calling this episode... What?
Okay. Hashtag yikes.
Yikes.
Oh, no. That's like an understatement. Understatement of the year. I'm going to be talking about the murder of Sylvia Likens. And if you've heard about this very sad, very tragic story, then you understand why I'm saying it's going to be heavy. It's because Sylvia Likens was a child who was murdered in Indianapolis, Indiana, in October of 1965. She was only 16 years old, and was held captive and subjected to increasing levels of child abuse and torture committed over a period of almost 3 months. And all of this happened at the hand of her caregiver, Gertrude... Oh, gosh.
Gertrude?
Banisuski.
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 Banisuski. So, this is called Gertrude. Because everyone hates Gertrude.
Or I'm going to call her Gertie. I don't know.
How about pieces of... okay.
So anyway, not only the caregiver, but many of Gertie's children and several other neighborhood children before ultimately succumbing to her injuries on October 26th. So I'm going to give you a little bit of some background on Miss Gertrude.
Ugh. In other words, a horrible person.
Literally scum of the earth. Dirt dwelling piece of caca.
I like the word caca.
I know you do.
How about Gertrude Gerkaka? I'm going to call her Gerkaka.
Can we not?
How about we call her Gerkaka?
Gerkaka.
Gerkaka. Hashtag Gerkaka. We'll get 5 hashtags, okay? Anyway.
Gerderude Sandstorm.
Gerd Nadine Banuzowski.
Oh my gosh.
Bowinski, the great Lebowski. The great Kaka.
I didn't think that the Gerkaka could get worse, but somehow you made it worse.
The big Gerkaka.
So Gertrude Nadine Banisuski was born in Indianapolis, Indiana, to Molly Myrtle and Hugh Marcus Van Fossen Sr., both of whom were originally from Illinois and were of American and Dutch descent. Gertrude was the third of 6 children, and her family was working class. On October 5th of 1939, Gertie saw her 50-year-old father die from a sudden heart attack.
Probably so, had to see her ugly face.
Jeffrey.
Oh, sorry. That was really rude.
She was a child.
So, we'll see what happens later.
Anyway, so already, you know, getting some of that good childhood trauma in.
Started young.
6 years later, she dropped out of high school at the age of 16 to marry 18-year-old John Stephen who was originally from Youngsville, Pennsylvania, and to whom she bore 4 children.
Interesting. So, she had a couple babies with this man, and...
So, although John had a volatile temper and occasionally beat his wife, the two would remain together for 10 years prior to their first divorce.
Oh, the first divorce. So, he just beat me a little bit and, you know, was really mean and hurt me and, you know, but he was a good man besides that.
Yeah, I mean,
you know who could have taught him a lesson? Her dad, if he was around.
Jeffrey.
What? What? I'm being serious.
Moving on.
I could say it. I'm allowed to.
Following her divorce, she married another man named Edward Guthrie. Not a good last name still.
Guthrie? Like Joffrey?
Guthrie.
Another Jeffrey? Guthrie? Get rid of these guys. Where does
Guthrie?
It say? Let me see. I want to see.
Guthrie? Whatever, I'm over it. The marriage lasted just 3 months before the couple divorced. Shortly thereafter, she remarried her first husband, bearing him 2 more children. The couple divorced a second time in 1963. Weeks after her third divorce, Banisuski began a relationship with a 22-year-old named Dennis Lee Wright. Shortly thereafter, Banisuski filed a paternity suit against Wright for financial support of their children, although Wright was seldom able to pay for the upkeep of their son. By 1965, Banisuski lived alone with her 7 children, Paula, who was 17, Stephanie, who was 15, John was 12, Marie was 11, Shirley 10, James 8, and Dennis Lee Wright Jr. was 1 years old. Although 36 years old and 5 feet 6 inches in height, she weighed only 100 pounds and was described as a haggard, underweight, asthmatic, chain smoker, suffering from depression due to the stress of 3 failed marriages, a failed relationship, and a recent miscarriage. So she was going through it.
Okay.
Although, much like Jeffrey Dahmer, I don't feel bad for them. These are just, I guess,
some back history of why she could.
Some things that propelled her in the direction that she ended up going. So, in addition to the sporadic checks she received from her first husband, a former Indianapolis policeman, which she primarily relied upon to financially support her children, she also occasionally performed odd jobs for neighbors and acquaintances, such as sewing or cleaning, in order to earn money. She resided in Indianapolis at 3850 East New York Street, where the monthly rent was $55.
Ooh. But back then, right?
Well, yeah, that was in...
That was like 1940s, 50s.
Yeah.
So it was still really good back then.
Yeah. I mean,
still, $50 for all those kids and all that stuff, that's pretty good for that.
Yeah. So, I'm also going to give you kind of the backstory on Sylvia. This way, you can see how she ended up in the care of Miss Gertie.
Gertrude. Kaka.
Miss Gertkaka.
Gertkaka nanny.
So, Sylvia was the 3rd of 5 children born to carnival workers, Lester Cecil Likens and his wife Elizabeth Betty Francis. She was born between 2 sets of fraternal twins, Daniel and Diana, 2 years older than she, and Benny and Jenny, 1 year younger than her.
Poor girl. I feel so bad. She must be the black sheep of the family.
So, all of her siblings were twins except for her.
So, she was definitely the odd man out.
Yeah.
Of everything. Out of a circus. That's sad.
On top of that, she suffered from polio, causing one of her legs to be weaker than the other. She was afflicted with a notable limp and had to wear a steel brace on one leg.
So she's Forrest Gump.
Essentially.
So she is like Forrest Gump with the brace on just one leg, though. Because she can't get the matching twin set.
Oh!
There we go. That was the pun I was looking for.
That's terrible.
It's funny, though.
It is funny. So, her parents, Lester and Elizabeth's marriage was unstable. They often sold candy, beer, and soda at carnival stands around Indiana throughout the summer, moving frequently and regularly experiencing severe financial difficulties. The Lycan sons regularly traveled with their parents in order to help out, but due to concerns for their younger daughter's safety and education, they didn't particularly like Sylvia and Jenny traveling with them in this employment. Both girls frequently resided with relatives, often their grandmother, so that their schoolwork would not suffer with their parents and brothers traveling with the carnival. In her teenage years, Sylvia Likens occasionally earned money by babysitting, running errands, or performing ironing chores for friends and neighbors, often giving her mother part of her earnings. So she was a little, like, entrepreneur.
Yeah, she did good, you know, for being by herself.
Pretty much.
Having another twin flame with her.
And helping her mom, too, just by giving her some of the money that she earned.
Mm-hmm, and taking care of everyone else and, you know, studying a lot. And back then, it was really good.
Yeah, she was described as a friendly, confident, and lively girl with long, wavy, light brown hair extending below her shoulders and was known as Cookie to her friends. So, although exuberant, Likens always kept her mouth closed when smiling due to having lost a front tooth in a collision with one of her brothers during a childhood game. She also had a fondness for music, in particular the Beatles, and was notably protective of her markedly more timid and insecure younger sister. On several occasions, the two sisters would visit a local skating rink, where Jenny would fasten a single roller skate to her strong foot, and Sylvia would lead her by the hand as they skated around the rink.
Aww, that's kind of cute.
Yeah.
Okay, what happens now? What ruins all of that?
Oh, you know what? I totally messed that up.
Did you?
Yeah, because Jenny was a younger sister. She was the one who suffered from polio.
Oh, I was about to say, that's even worse. But the younger twin head.
I was like, I'm so dumb.
We can keep it in. I don't care. I don't think they care.
At this point, I'm not going to go back and try and retrace my steps. So I'm sorry, I'm stupid.
Sorry, everyone. So the one that
was her actually... younger sister is the one who had polio and the braces. But Sylvia
was the one
is the one who took care of her younger sister.
So how many kids are there? There's five or four. I think that's all that matters.
There's five.
There's five, okay. And the middle one always took care of the younger one who happened to be, you know, who had polio.
The middle one was the... So, you're confusing me more.
I'm confusing myself more.
Anyway. Sylvia is the one who gets murdered.
Oh, that's good to know.
So, Sylvia is the one to pay attention to. Jenny is still in the story, so she's important. And she's the one who had polio.
So, Jenny's still on the block.
Jenny's... I'm leaving. Goodbye. By June of 1965, Sylvia and Jenny Likens resided with their parents in Indianapolis, and on July 3rd, their mother was arrested and subsequently jailed for shoplifting. Shortly thereafter, Lester Likens arranged for his daughters to board with Gertrude, the mother of two girls with whom the sisters had recently become acquainted while studying at Arsenal Technical High School, Paula and Stephanie Benzerle. At the time of the boarding agreement, Gertrude assured Lester she would care for his daughters until his return as if they were her own children.
Well, how nice, how caring, how lovely.
Such a just upstanding citizen.
This Gertrude lady is sure a peach. She's such a dime. She's wonderful. Yeah. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what happens?
Shortly after the July 4th holiday, the sisters moved into 3850 East New York Street in order that their father and later their mother could travel to the East Coast with the carnival, with the understanding that Gertrude would receive weekly boarding fees of $20 to care for their daughters until they returned to collect Sylvia and Jenny in November of that year. So just a few months.
Yeah, which $20, that's like half the rent.
Yeah.
For a week, that's like $100. $80 a month. That's really good.
How many weeks are in a month, Jeff?
There's four, sometimes five. It depends. Is it like four, like once a week? We receive weekly boarding. Okay. I know if they do like the Thursday thing, you know, some Thursdays is like 5 weeks.
Okay. All right.
So, you know what I mean.
I'm messing with you. During the initial weeks in which Sylvia and Jenny resided at the Benzinski's household, the sisters were subjected to very little discipline or abuse. Likens regularly sang along to pop records with Stephanie, and she willingly participated in housework at the residence. Both girls also regularly attended Sunday school with the Benzinski children. So they just kind of, you know, they melted into their lives, and
she was actually a good Gertrude.
Yeah. Things were peachy keen. They were kind of like a blended family, essentially. So it was all right.
Aw, and the end?
It's not all right at the end.
Oh, no. Is this the end? Please tell me this is the end.
No, this is the tippity top of the beginning.
Oh, no. And whenever you go up, you have to come down.
And we're like only halfway through. Oh, yeah. This is going to be a two-parter.
Is it?
There's no way.
Well, we also had like 5 minutes of nothing, so.
We'll see. So although Lester Likens had agreed to pay Gertrude $20 a week in exchange for the care of his daughters, these weekly payments gradually failed to arrive exactly upon the prearranged dates, occasionally arriving 1 or 2 days late. Which, I mean, 1 or 2 days late, come on. In response, Gertrude began venting her frustrations at this fact upon the sisters by beating their bare buttocks with various instruments, such as a 1/4-inch thick paddle, making statements such as, "Well, I took care of you two little bitches for a week for nothing."
She wants her money. She's a mafia.
Okay, I get her wanting her money, but don't take it out on the kids. That's not their fault.
Yeah, if you don't ever take it out on the kids.
On one occasion in late August, both girls... Oh, wait. August. Yeah, okay. Both girls were beaten approximately 15 times on the back with the aforementioned paddle. After Paula had accused the sister of eating too much food at church supper, the household children had attended. By mid-August of 1965, Gertrude had begun to focus her abuse almost exclusively upon Sylvia, with her primary motivation likely being jealousy of her physical appearance and potential in life.
That's sad.
Yes. According to subsequent trial testimony, this abuse was initially inflicted upon Sylvia after she and Jenny had returned to the residence from Arsenal Technical High School, as well as on weekends.
Of course, also the school would not notice anything.
Yeah. The initial abuse included subjecting Likens to beatings and being refused sufficient food, which would gradually lead to Likens eating leftovers or spoiled food out of garbage cans. On one occasion, Likens was accused of stealing candy she had actually purchased. On another occasion in late August, Likens was subjected to humiliation when she claimed to have a boyfriend in Long Beach, whom she had met in the spring of 1965 when her family lived in California. In response to hearing this, Gertrude asked if she had ever done anything with a boy, to which Likens, unsure of her meaning, replied, "I guess so," and offered that she had gone skating with boys there and once went to a park on the beach with them and Jenny. So a very innocent response.
Yeah. She probably didn't know what was going on.
Have you ever done anything with boys? Yeah, we did stuff. We, like, went to the skate park. Went to the innocent.
We went to the beach. We did all this fun stuff.
Continuing the conversation, Stephanie and Jenny Likens mentioned that she had once lain under the covers with her boyfriend.
Scandalous.
Scandalous. Upon hearing this, Gertrude asked, "Why did you do that, Sylvia?" Likens replied, "I don't know," and shrugged. Several days later, Gertrude returned to the subject with Likens, telling her, You're certainly getting big in the stomach, Sylvia. It looks like you're going to have a baby."
Of course she would say that. How rude.
Likens thought Gertrude was kidding with her and said, "Yeah, it sure is getting big. I'm just going to have to go on a diet." However, Gertrude then informed her and the other girls in the household that whenever they did something with a boy, they would be sure to have a baby. So, great parenting. It's a good way to have the talk.
Yeah, especially that way. Like, if you want to, if you can't discipline another person's kid, you don't straight say, "Hey, you're going to have a baby now, and you're going to get punished and do all this stuff." Especially if you want to teach your kids a lesson, you pull them aside and say, "Hey, my kids were a little different over here. Can you do it this way, perhaps?" Or just talk about it. And yeah. You can talk with your parents about this later. Just the way she did it is like, I think she's kind of...
Well, it gets worse.
Does it? Oh, man.
So, after saying that, she kicked Likens in the genitals.
Oh.
Paula, who herself was overweight, 3 months pregnant, and also jealous of Sylvia, then participated in attacking Likens, knocking her off the chair onto the kitchen floor, shouting, "You ain't fit to sit in a chair." So you ain't fit to sit in a chair.
Just like mother and daughter. Pieces of caca.
On another occasion, as the family ate supper, Gertrude, Paula, and a neighborhood boy named Randy Gordon, Leopard.
Leopard? Like Leopard?
No, it's Randy Gordon Leopard, not Leopard. I'm sorry.
Labor.
They force-fed Likens a hot dog overloaded with condiments, including mustard, ketchup, and spices. Likens vomited as a result and was later forced to consume what she had regurgitated. In what would be Likens' only act of retaliation, she spread a rumor at Arsenal Tech High School that Stephanie and Paula were prostitutes.
Yeah, you go, girl.
So, is that great? No. Does it deserve the amount of abuse that she later got? No.
No. And the school should have been really paying attention to this kind of stuff.
But.
They never do.
Yeah. She did this because she was upset with the household singling her out for similar accusations. While at school, Stephanie was jokingly propositioned by a boy who told her that Likens had started the rumor about her. Upon returning home that day, Stephanie questioned Likens about the rumor, and she admitted to starting it. Angel Stephanie punched her in response, but Likens apologized to her in tears, and Stephanie also began to cry. However, when Stephanie's boyfriend, 15-year-old Coy Hubbard, heard about the rumor, he brutally attacked Likens, slapping her, banging her head against the wall, and flipping her backwards onto the floor. What a wonderful boyfriend.
Like, hey, only I'm allowed to do that to her. Only I'm allowed to say that kind of things about her.
When Gertrude found out, she used the paddle to beat Likens. On another occasion, Paula beat Likens about the face with such force that she broke her own wrist, having primarily focused her blows upon Likens' teeth and eyes. So she literally broke her wrist beating her in the face.
That gets me. Sorry, guys. I'm getting angry. I just want to break her face.
I know.
This Gertrude piece of...
And then on top of it, Paula later used her cast to further beat Likens.
Now she has a double whammy.
Which, do you know how badly that hurts? Because yeah. I do. Thanks, brother. Thanks to my little brother, Elijah.
Cast into the fire.
He literally used to use his cast as a battering ram to, like, smash us in the head.
That's the best thing to do, especially when they're sleeping on the couch. Go up and just whack them in the top of the head.
It's terrible.
So now my whole family's at Gertrude now. Thanks, guys. They use the paddle. They use that. Man.
Man.
This sounds pretty bad.
Oh, it gets worse.
Oh, no.
The whole thing just continues to just get worse. So, yeah. Gertrude repeatedly falsely accused Likens of promiscuity and of engaging in prostitution, delivering rants to Likens regarding the filthiness of prostitution and of women in general. Gertrude would later occasionally force Jenny to strike her own sister, beating Jenny if she did not comply.
Oh.
So, like, even worse.
That's worse. Like, some people, they are okay. This sounds really bad. They can handle it themselves. Like, yeah. They can handle beating, like, that physical abuse and mental abuse themselves, but they cannot suffer here when someone else is suffering, yeah. Like a sister or brother.
Yeah.
That's like how I am. I rather deal with it than my family.
Yeah.
And so if someone asked me to do that, I don't know what I would do. That's sad.
Yeah.
That's terrifying. That's horrible.
I know. So Coy Hubbard and several of his classmates frequently visited the Benzinski residents to both physically and verbally torment Likens, often collaborating with the children and Gertrude herself. With the active encouragement of Gertrude, these neighborhood children routinely beat Likens, sometimes using her as a practice dummy in violent judo lessons, lacerating her body, burning her skin with lit cigarettes in excess of 100 times, and severely injuring her genitals. To entertain Gertrude and her teenage accomplices, Likens was forced at one point to strip naked in the family living room and insert an empty Coke bottle into her vagina in their presence, with Gertrude stating to all present that this act of humiliation being for Sylvia to prove to Jenny what kind of girl you are.
Okay, guys. I don't like this one. How come I'm having a harder time with this than I did with Jeffrey? This is messed up.
I think we've desensitized ourselves to things like Jeffrey Dahmer, where they're serial killers and they're big names and they're very well known.
And I think it's because they kill, but I cannot stand the torturing. I like the public humiliation, too.
Well, I mean, getting a hole drilled into your head and boiling water porn into your brain is torture.
I know, but I guess what my thing is,
But she's like a little.
That's what I'm saying. She's a little girl, and this person's supposed to be a mother.
Some of those boys were underage too. Yeah. But I get what you're saying.
What I'm saying is, there's supposed to be a mother figure taking care of a child.
Yeah.
That's like goes against everything human.
And doing these things in front of her little sister.
And saying, this is what this is. And like, that's just wrong in so many ways.
Yeah. So eventually Gertrude forbade Likens from attending school after she confessed to having stolen a gym suit from school. And after Gertrude had refused to purchase the clothing for her. So for this act of theft, Gertrude whipped Likens with a 3-inch-wide police belt. Gertrude then switched her conversation to the evils of premarital sex before repeatedly kicking Likens in the genitals as Stephanie rallied to Likens' defense, shouting, "She didn't do anything." Gertrude then burned Likens' fingertips with a match before further whipping her.
Oh, man. So even Stephanie's saying it now.
Yeah.
So the one that was actually beating her is saying, okay, that's kind of going too far.
Yeah, but it only gets worse.
It only gets worse? Okay. Of course it would.
A few days later, Gertrude repeatedly whipped Jenny with a police belt after she reportedly stole a single tennis shoe from the school to wear on her strong foot. So now poor Jenny is getting beaten. So it's not just Sylvia.
It's Jenny also.
Yes.
So, and that's what a sister, whenever you're a big sister, that's one of the worst things you ever see is whenever you're...
And it's like, it's not like they're stealing things, like, that are, like, vain, you know what I mean?
Like value. It's like...
They're just stealing things that they need that they're not being provided.
Yeah.
So, it's not okay to steal in any means, but, like...
A shoe for
they were really foot. Put in a bad spot. So, the Lakin sisters were fearful of notifying either family members or adults at their school of the increasing incidents of abuse and neglect they were enduring, as both were afraid of doing so would only worsen their predicament. Which, I understand.
I get that.
But if only they said something.
Yeah. If only, what if the teachers noticed? What if someone noticed? What if someone... like, pulled him and say, you can't go anywhere. What if the cops were called?
And yeah, they... and honestly, where's their dad in all of this? I understand he's working, and it's not like you could just call them up on their cell phone, but, like, is he riding? Is, like, he doesn't visit them at all? Like,
Well, if it says he's a traveling circus person, like, if he's, like, one of the owners and stuff, what about their brothers? What about, there's so many questions left unanswered with them.
It's like, how do you just drop your kids off and just, like, assume that they're okay for months?
I'll see you in a year. Have fun.
Anyway. It's not his fault. He didn't... But, like, still. Anyway. Okay. So Jenny in particular struggled against the urge to notify family members, as she had been threatened by Gertrude that she would herself be abused and tortured to the same degree as her sister if she did so. So really using that against her and manipulating her. Jenny was also subjected to bullying by the girls in her neighborhood, in addition to occasionally being ridiculed or beaten whenever she alluded to Sylvia's situation. So she saw consequences from trying to get help, which...
Yeah.
Yeah. In July and August, both Lester and Elizabeth Likens would occasionally return to Indianapolis to visit their daughters whenever their travel schedule afforded them the opportunity. Oh, I guess they did.
So in July and August.
But, yeah.
That's like a whole year.
No.
They started in October the previous year.
But they still, yeah, they still waited months to go. The last occasion Lester and Elizabeth visited their daughters was in late August. On this occasion, neither girl exhibited any visible signs of distress about their mistreatment to their parents, likely because both were in the presence of Gertrude and her children. So I'm sure being afraid of being outnumbered and them basically jumping on them for lying or whatever, but if they just had said something or like, hey, look at all these bruises, like, help. I mean, why wouldn't their parents just pull them away from that situation immediately?
Yeah, if they said anything like that at all. And then, like, they can go anywhere if they just said something, but they're traumatized.
Yeah. So after, almost immediately after Lester and Elizabeth had left the household. On their final visit, Gertrude turned to face Lykins and stated, "What are you going to do now, Sylvia? Now they're gone." So very taunting. On one occasion in September, the girls encountered their older sister, Diana Shoemaker, at a local park. Both Jenny and Sylvia informed Diana as to the abuse they were enduring at the hands of their caregiver on this occasion, adding that Sylvia was being specifically targeted for physical abuse, almost always for things she had neither said nor done. Neither sister mentioned the actual address where they resided, and initially Diana believed her sisters must be exaggerating their claims regarding the scope of their mistreatment. So screw their sister, because she should have taken that seriously regardless. Yeah. And just checked anyway.
Just at least let the parents know, hey, how have they been? They seem fine? Because they just told me all this stuff. Maybe just double check with them.
So several weeks prior to this occasion, Sylvia and Jenny had encountered Diana in the same park while in the company of 11-year-old Marie Benzinski. I'm saying the last name wrong, so I'm sorry. I probably say it different every single time. But Benisuski. Whatever.
Benisuski.
It's probably going to come out Benzinski every time.
The great Benzinski.
And Sylvia had been given a sandwich to eat when she had mentioned to her sister that she was hungry. Lykins remained silent about the matter, although Marie revealed this fact to her family in late September. In response, Gertrude accused Lykins of engaging in gluttony before she and Paula choked and bludgeoned her. The pair then subjected Lykins to a scalding bath to cleanse her of her sins, with Gertrude grabbing Lykins' hair and repeatedly banging her head against the bath to revive her when she fainted. Shortly after this incident, the father of the neighborhood boy named Michael John Monroe phoned Arsenal Technical High School to anonymously report that a girl with open sores across her entire body was living at the Benzuishiki household. As Lykins had not attended school for several days, a school nurse visited the household to investigate these claims. So ready to get angry again?
I'm already angry. What are you talking about?
Gertrude claimed to the nurse that Lykins had run away from her home with the previous week and that she was unaware of her actual whereabouts, adding that Lykins was out of control and that her open sores were a result of Lykins' refusal to maintain decent personal hygiene. Gertrude further claimed that Lykins was a bad influence on both her own children and her sister. The school made no further investigations in relation to Lykins' welfare.
So you can't rely on sister, you can't rely on parents, you can't rely on the school.
Nope.
This is awesome, guys.
Yeah. The immediate neighbors of the family were a middle-aged couple named Raymond and Phyllis Vermillion. Both initially viewed Gertrude as an ideal caregiver for the Lykins sisters, and both had visited the residence on two occasions when the girls had been under Gertrude's care. On both occasions, the Vermillions witnessed Paula physically abusing Lykins, who on both occasions had a black eye and openly boasted about her mistreatment of the child to them. So she's basically bragging about how she abuses them.
How she teaches them lesson all the time for all this.
And yet, another witness to this, basically sweeping it under the rug. So upon their second visit to the household, both observed Lykins to appear extremely weak and somewhat zombified in nature. Nevertheless, the Vermillions never reported Lykins' evident mistreatment to the authorities.
Of course they wouldn't.
Don't be that guy. As one of my favorite podcasts says, if you see something, say something.
Yes. Especially if you can control it or help it in your neighborhood. If you notice your neighbor doing that kind of stuff, you go kick their rears, kill them.
Jeff,
let the cops
you cannot advise people to
if they beat a child, touch a child, they're dying.
Don't take Jeff's advice. Just report them. There's nothing that we could physically do, which is infuriating. However, you can report it to the proper authorities, and that's better than doing nothing.
Yeah, you never know. I mean, eventually they could have talked to the school, and the school might have given actually cared, and then the
if cops, each like, of these people individually had just made some sort of report, like, who knows, it could have made a difference, it could have not made a difference, but
could have made an investigation with more of the police, and then yeah, it could have maybe, who knows, it
could have saved her life
with their luck, probably not.
So I don't know. Anyway, on or about October 1st, Diana Shoemaker discovered that her sisters were temporarily residing at the at Gertie's house. She visited the property in an attempt to initiate regular contact. Gertrude, however, refused Diana entrance to her property, stating that she had received permission from their parents not to allow the girls to see her. She then ordered Diana off her property, and approximately 2 weeks later, Diana encountered Jenny by chance close to the house and inquired as to Sylvia's welfare. She was informed, "I can't tell you or I'll get in trouble."
And that's when she probably was like, "Oh crap, it's actually happening."
So, yeah. "I can't tell you or I'll get in trouble."
Of course. Of course. And that's when she should have been like, "Oh crap, this is for real."
Yeah, but she wasn't, and she did nothing.
Why are people so...
And it only got worse.
Of course it would.
Due to the increase in the frequency and brutality of the torture and mistreatment she was subjected to, Likens gradually became incontinent.
Incontinent. What? Oh, she ended up with.
Oh.
Wait. Yeah.
Okay. So.
Right.
Yeah. Incontinent. She was denied any access to the bathroom, being forced to wet herself. So that can also cause urinary tract infections, and mm-hmm. being incontinent basically means that you have uncontrolled leakage of urine. So basically at any point in time you're urinating yourself. So, and I'm sure, you know, inserting a glass Coke bottle into your vagina didn't help. Neither did getting kicked in the groin repeatedly and whatever else that they did to her. As a form of punishment for her incontinence, on October 6th, Gertrude threw Likens into the basement and tied her up. Here, Likens was often kept naked, rarely fed, and frequently deprived of water. Occasionally, she was tied to the railing of the basement stairs with her feet barely touching the ground. In the weeks prior to locking Likens in the family basement, Gertrude had increasingly abused and tormented Likens. She would occasionally falsely claim to the children in the household that either she herself or one of them had been recipient of direct insults from Likens, in the hope that this would goad them into belittling or attacking her. So really rallying everybody up to abuse her in the same fashion.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
That's so...
On one occasion, Gertrude held a knife aloft and challenged Likens to fight me back, to which Likens replied she did not know how to fight. In response, Gertrude inflicted a light scour wound to Likens' leg. Physical and mental torture such as this was occasionally ceased by the Bensuskis to watch their favorite television show. So they only stopped basically for entertainment.
Yeah.
But
Like, fight back. I don't know how to fight. She's such a pure young girl.
Yeah.
That's so sad.
Neighborhood children were also occasionally charged 5 cents apiece to see the display of Likens' body and to humiliate, beat, scald, burn, and ultimately mutilate her. So they were literally charging 5 cents. I'm baffled. I'm absolutely baffled that these types of humans can exist. And they still do, because stuff like this still happens.
All the time.
There was actually an incident in our town where this poor little boy was beat to death by his stepfather. Oh, it's so frustrating. It's like, to do it to another adult is still bad, but to literally, like, torture a little child who can't fight back, you're a coward, and you deserve every horrible thing on this planet. Anyway, throughout the period of Lycan's captivity in the basement, Gertrude frequently, with the assistance of her children and neighborhood children, restrained Lycan's before placing her in a bathtub filled with scalding water before proceeding to rub salt into her wounds. Oh. So, literally, salt on an open wound. She's the worst!
Her family's the worst.
I'm so angry! In order to muffle Lycan's screams, her tormentors would regularly place a cloth gag in her mouth as they tortured her. On one occasion, Gertrude and her 12-year-old son, John Jr., rubbed urine and feces from Gertrude's 1-year-old son's diaper into Lycan's mouth before giving her a cup half-filled with water and stating the water was all she would receive for the remainder of the day.
Sorry we're so quiet, guys. It's just, this is a rough one.
On October 22nd, John Benzinski Jr. tormented Lycan's by offering to allow her to eat a bowl of soup with her fingers, and then quickly taking away the bowl when Lycan's, by this stage suffering from extreme malnourishment, attempted to eat the food. Gertrude eventually allowed Lycan's to sleep upstairs on the condition that she learned not to wet herself, which she physically could not control at this point. And that night, Sylvia whispered to Jenny to secretly give her a glass of water before falling asleep. The following morning, Gertrude discovered that Lycan's had urinated herself. As a punishment, Lycan's was forced to insert an empty glass Coca-Cola bottle into her vagina in the presence of the children before Gertrude ordered her into the basement. So it's not even just physical torture, but the mental aspect of it is almost so much worse.
Yeah.
So this is a quote from Richard Hobbs, who testified as to Gertrude's decision to carve an insult into Lycan's abdomen, which is the next. Gertrude called Sylvia upstairs to the kitchen. Somehow the conversation got around to tattooing, and Gertrude asked Sylvia whether she knew what a tattoo was. She said, "You branded my children, so now I'm going to brand you." Shortly thereafter, Gertrude shouted for Lycan's to return to the kitchen, then ordered her to strip naked before proclaiming to her, "You have branded my daughters, now I'm going to brand you." She began carving the words, "I'm a prostitute and proud of it," onto Lycan's abdomen with a heated needle.
I wish I could just take that and stab her in the eye. Why is Indiana so bad? Why is it worse than Wisconsin?
You know, I had this or an equally bad story of a serial killer who's, like, up to par with Jeffrey Dahmer.
I think we should have done him rather than this story. This story's messed up. Okay, Kaylee.
Try to keep going. I know. I'm sorry. there's going to be so many just silent moments that I'm going to have to cut out, and you guys have no idea. Maybe yeah. I'll leave one of them in so you understand, like,
how rough it is.
Yeah. Okay, so when Gertrude was unable to finish the branding, she instructed one of the neighborhood children present, 14-year-old Richard Hobbs, to finish etching the words into Lycan's flesh as she took Jenny to a nearby grocery store. In what Hobbs would later insist were short, light etchings, he continued to brand the text into Lycan's abdomen as she clenched her teeth and moaned. Both Hobbs and 10-year-old Shirley then led Lycan's into the basement, where each proceeded to use an anchor bolt in an attempt to burn the letter S underneath Lycan's left breast, although they applied one section of the loop backwards, and this deep burn scar resembled the number 3. Idiots.
Wow.
Yeah. So Gertrude later taunted Lycans by claiming that she would never be able to marry due to the words carved on her stomach stating, "Sylvia, what are you going to do now? You can't get married now. What are you going to do?" Weeping, Lycans replied, "I guess there's nothing I can do." This poor freaking girl. I'm so upset. Like, okay, don't cry. It's fine.
I'm just angry.
I'm angry, but I'm, like, so angry that I'm sad. I'm so sad that I'm angry. Both. All of it. She was then carried back to the basement by Coy Hubbard. Later that day, Lycans was forced to display the carving to neighborhood children, with Gertrude claiming that she had received the inscription at a sex party. That night, Sylvia confided to her sister, "Jenny, I know you don't want me to die, but I'm going to die. I can tell it."
Which is really sad. Imagine your sister saying that to you.
I'm literally trying so hard not to cry.
This is rough. Can we just go back to Jeffrey Dahmer and Ted Bundy, please?
I'm sorry.
Can we get back to the Golden State Killer?
Okay, don't cry. The following day, Gertrude woke Lycans, then forced her to write a letter as she dictated the contents, which were intended to mislead her parents into believing their daughter had run away from the residence. The content of this letter was intended to frame a group of anonymous local boys for extensively abusing and mutilating Lycans after she had initially agreed to engage in sexual relations with them before they inflicted the extreme abuse and torture upon her body. After Lycans had written this letter, Gertrude finished formulating her plan to have John Jr. and Jenny blindfold Sylvia and take her to a nearby wooded area known as Jimmy's Forest. Oof. Jimmy's Forest, and leave her there to die. After she had finished writing the letter, Lycans was then again tied to the stair railing and offered a cracker to eat, although she refused them, saying, "Give it to the dog. I don't want it." In response, Gertrude forced the crackers into Lycan's mouth before she and John Benzuski beat her, particularly around the stomach.
Well.
So.
What, Kaylee?
I'm sorry.
Should we take a break?
I think that that's enough.
For this week.
I hate to just stop it there, but. Oof.
This is a rough one.
Oof.
And it was long.
It was a lot longer than I initially expected, and I'm sorry to leave you on such a heavy story.
Yeah.
But I'm literally about to cry, and I think I need to take a break.
Okay.
I'm fighting tears. Not to be dramatic or anything, like, a lot of our stories are not good. They're very sad. A lot of them have horrible endings for people who did not deserve to go out the way that they did. But for some reason, this one just...
It's because the whole child and the whole mother role, they fail. And it's a lot. It's really heavy. I'm having a lot more hard time with this than the last few with Jeffrey Dahmer and other people.
And, yeah, I think maybe it's because we've been desensitized, but this one is just, ugh. Yeah, it's rough, particularly rough.
All right, so with that said, we're going to be ending with this part one.
Yeah. And I hate to put any promotion after just, like, basically talking about a really heavy subject. So, I mean, maybe just spend this week kind of
going to your neighbor's house and checking everything. If you see abuse, kill them.
Okay. Do not trespass. Jeff, again, giving people bad advice, telling them to go to their neighbors and kill people. And
if they are attempting to hurt someone, kill them with a knife. Use
Jeff.
Use a stop. Statue.
We're not going to be liable for people going out and committing crimes. Do not do that.
I'm not liable. They can do it on themselves.
No. If they cite us as their, like, inspiration, we're getting sued. I don't want to get sued.
Okay.
Jeff. Don't sue guys. Me.
Wink, wink. Don't do it. Wink, wink. I'm winking right now. I'm not encouraging you guys to go beat up people like that. Wink, wink.
Stop it.
Okay, I'll stop. Seriously, though, guys. Just keep an eye out. If you notice anything different with your neighbors, check on them. Say hi. I know this world is kind of
especially right now with kids being quarantined, I can't help but worry just because there's been a lot of documentaries that have surfaced recently about child abuse and just like
domestic abuse, everything, all this kind of mental abuse.
Just treat your fellow humans with kindness and compassion. You have no idea what they're going through back at home. As you can clearly see, these people were hiding it. A lot of people hide it because they're in fear. So just extend kindness. If that's the least that you can do, that's still something.
Something.
Just be kind and courteous. Like, understand that not everybody has the best life to go home to.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
So, with that said.
And also, if you are suffering, if you're in a position where you're feeling captive or you're being physically or mentally abused, there are resources.
There are people you can talk to.
Jeff and I will leave some links below for you to potentially contact to get help. And you can get out of that situation. There have been people who have gotten out of situations before. And if you've been looking for a sign to leave or to get help, then hopefully maybe this is a sign. This is your sign right now. So we'll leave some resources down below. And
you're not alone, guys.
You're not alone. We got you. Sorry to be so, like, heavy this week. I'm so sorry. I don't mean to.
Why are we being so heavy right now?
I mean, it's not going to get any better next week, but please come back still.
And then don't worry, she'll say her rest of her story, and then I'll tell you guys.
Can you guys, like, send me some memes or something?
She loves cats.
At United States of Horror on Instagram.
And how else can you find us, Kaylee?
You can find us on Facebook. That's facebook.com/ United States of Horror. We also have our Facebook page, our group, where you can go on and have conversations. That's Facebook. It's just the United States of Horror Fanatics.
You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify.
If you're listening, then you know.
Yeah,
please share our podcast with your friends and family.
Leave a review, like, rate, subscribe, do all that stuff.
We're going to have some pretty cool merch coming out, but I'll, you know, just keep an eye out.
You never know, guys. You
never know. Let us know what you're thinking. You could also email us at unitedstatesofhorror@gmail.com. Forgot about that one.
Okay, guys, and Jeff here.
Kaylee here.
And we are United States of Horror.
Aww, yeah. That wasn't so great.
And we'll talk to you later.
All right, see you guys.
Bye.
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 Bye.